We're holding on Kuf Gimel Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, HaMekabel Sadeh Mechaveireh. A person is Mekabel, a field from somebody else, whereas we talked about yesterday, you have various possibilities as far as Mekabel. You have where he's an Oris and is getting a percentage, or you have a Choicher where he's paying a fixed amount of produce, or you could even have where he's a Socher and he pays a certain amount of money in rent rather than produce. Anyway, a person is Mekabel, a field. V'hi beis ha-shulchin, and this field is a beis ha-shulchin, the kind of ground where it's not enough to, it's not, rainwater is not enough for it, you have to irrigate it. Oy beis ha-ilan, or it's a or it's a field that has trees in it. Now Rashi points out when it has trees in it, then the artist has a preference for it because you don't have to work as hard taking care of trees as you do taking care of crops that grow in the ground. And as we learned yesterday, in many places they have the minhag that the artist also gets a percentage of the fruit of the trees, even though he didn't work on them, or even though he didn't work on them very much. So therefore, he has a preference for that. Anyway, Yavish HaMayan, so now if it was a Beis HaShochen and it had a spring in it, so now if that spring dried up, the Nikta Se'ilon, or the trees were chopped down, Einem Anakaloi Min Chakurai. So the Mekabel, the tenant, does not have the right to say, I'm going to pay less, I'm going to pay less in rent. Because, in other words, to begin with, he never said anything about that I'm doing it at this rate, that I'm gonna willing to accept and to pay you at this rate because there's a Mayan or because there's trees. So it might be that the Mayan makes it preferable. Now it means he doesn't have to go schlep water all the way from the river or whatever. And in the case of the Ilan, that again, that he gets fruit basically for free. Nevertheless, he didn't specify that, and therefore he doesn't get to deduct from his rental because of that. But Omer Loi, but if he told him, Chakoli Sada Beis HaShochen Zu, if he told him, rent me this Beis HaShochen, so then it means, in other words, so we'll see in the Gemara, is that the focus is the fact that he mentioned Beis HaShochen, or the fact that he mentioned Zu. Anyway, Oy Sada Beis HaElon Zeh, or he mentioned this place that has trees. Either way, again, he specifically mentioned the Mayan or the trees, or the vote would be that he said the word Zeh. Anyway, Yavish HaMayim and Nikta Ilan, in those cases, if the spring dries up or if the trees get chopped down, Menachalim in Chakurai, then he does get to deduct from the amount that he would give, because then he wouldn't have agreed, because the fact is he said to begin with that he's willing to do it, that he's willing to do it only, in effect he was saying that he's willing to do it only with such conditions. The Yerushalmi actually brings that only if the spring completely dried up and only if the trees are completely chopped down. If the spring is not producing as much water as before, then even when he said Beis HaShochen Zu, he still doesn't get to deduct anything from the rent. And as far as the trees, the Yerushalmi says, if you have left 10 trees in an area of Beis Sa, then the owner of the land can tell him that, on the other hand, you know what? It's true there aren't as many trees as before. On the other hand, you gain because now there's more land available for planting, and therefore your share of the crops is going to be larger, and therefore he wouldn't get to deduct as a result of that. Tosfos point now, the Gemara is going to point out that the din of our Mishnah will apply both with a choicher and with an oris. So whether he's getting a percentage or whether he's paying a fixed amount, either way, the din of our Mishnah will apply. So Tosfos says, because since we're talking about, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, that he made it clear that he wants it only because it's a Beis HaShochen, or only because it has trees. So therefore, so even if he's an Oris, and with an Oris we say it works on percentages, nevertheless, we're still saying that we're still saying that he'd be entitled to deduct. He'd be entitled to give less. Because you can say, you know what, I agreed to this deal with Arisus, where you're going to get such and such percentage, and I'll get such and such, is based on the fact of it being a Beis HaShochen or a Beis HaElon, and now that it's less, then I say we need to renegotiate it, and I get to give you less of the produce. Okay. Well, the Gemara asks, hey, Hidomi, what is the scenario? Ilema de Yovish Nara Rabba. Are you talking about that the big river that supplies water to all the fields in this area dried up? Well then, Amai Enim Anakale Min Chakura. Why in the Resha, if he didn't say that I want that I'm renting a Beis HaShochen or a Beis HaIlon, why should he not allow? Why should he not be allowed to deduct? Namele Makas Medina. He should be able to tell him this is a Makas Medina. It's something that it's something that's affecting the entire area. And in fact, now we're going to learn in a Mishnah later on Kufei Omad Beis, we're going to say that in the case of a Choycher, at least, he is entitled to deduct from the amount of produce that he's paying as rent if there's a Makas Medina. So Agoris Agura points out, what the Gemara is asking would in fact apply only to a Choycher, this particular detail, unlike we said before, we just said that Tosfos says the Din of our Mishnah applies to both a Choycher and an Oris, whether he's paying a fixed amount or whether he's paying on percentages. But what the Gemara is asking about a Makas Medina necessarily would apply only to a Choycher, just as the Mishnah later on that mentions Makas Medina is referring only to him, because in the case of an Oris, you don't really have such an argument one way or the other. Okay, it means, in other words, you're going to give me whatever percentage of the crops of the field if the river dried up and therefore the field not producing very much. Fine, there's going to be less for both of us, but nevertheless, that's how it's going to be. Anyway, over here, the question is, you should be able to say it's Makas Medina, so therefore he should be entitled to get a lot to pay less for rent. Amara Papa, the Yavish Nara Zuta. So the Papa answers, the answer is we're not talking about with a large river that supplies all the fields in the area dried up. You're right, then he would be entitled to deduct from his to reduce the amount he pays as rent. Rather, we're talking about the smaller river, the canal that they dug going from the bigger river to this area. So you have a big river that supplies the entire area with many, many valleys full of fields. Then you have every particular valley, every particular area of several fields has a canal that they dig in order to supply water to those. Well, the fact that dried up is not a reason for him to get away with paying less rent to Omale, because the owner of the field can tell him, even if the small river, the canal, has dried up, you still could have brought water to the field using buckets, and therefore, if he had said to begin with, I'm renting this Beis HaShochen, then that's different. But we said if he didn't say that, then the owner can tell him, I know you expected it to be a Beis HaShochen, it's a Beis HaShochen, it needs to be irrigated, and you expected to be able to do it from the spring that's right there in the field. Now that spring has dried up, or even we're saying the Nara Zutta, the canal has dried up. Nevertheless, it's not like the whole area is dry. You could bring water, you would just have to bring it in buckets from elsewhere. So therefore, it's not a Makas Medina, and therefore, no, I don't have to reduce your, therefore, I don't have to reduce your rent because of that. Tosfos discusses,
if it hasn't been stipulated, why is it enforced, basically? It should have been stipulated to begin with.
Just the opposite. They did stipulate at the beginning. They did say that, for example, I'm going to pay you 10 bushels per year as a choycher, or I'm going to give you one third of the crop as an oris. Now we're saying that they didn't actually say at the time, he didn't actually specify, I'm agreeable to those terms because it's a Beis HaShochen and because it has a spring in it to irrigate it, and therefore that makes my job easier, or because it has trees in it, and therefore I get I get a percentage of the fruit of the trees thrown in for free. He didn't actually specify that at the time. Therefore, we're saying the fact that those circumstances changed does not entitle him to a reduction in his rent. If he had specified them, then that's what the Mishnah said, then he is entitled to that. So we're not talking they had negotiated the terms to begin with, but they hadn't said anything about that the terms are because this place has a spring or whatever.
They didn't negotiate weather damage or something like that. So
weather damage is going to be in later Mishnayos in the Perek. That we're going to deal with in later Mishnayos in the Perek. What happens if there's weather damage? What that does as far as the rental agreement. Right now we're dealing with something that affects the ease of taking care of the field in the case of a Beis HaShochen in the spring, or the extras, the bonuses that he's going to get, namely the fruits of the trees. Anyway, Tosafos adds, by the way, that the fact is, as long as the big river is still operational, even if it's not only this particular area's irrigation canal that dried up, even if there are others, as long as it's not the big river, it's still not considered a, even so, it might even be considered a makas medina because it affects a wider area. Nevertheless, the Gemara is saying you could still tell him the fact is the big river still exists. It is a further distance away, but nevertheless, you'd be able to bring bucket water with buckets that way, and therefore you're responsible to do that, and therefore I don't have to reduce your rent. And then Tosfos goes on to say that maybe also the truth is with chachirus, where if it's a rental agreement based on a fixed amount of produce, maybe you wouldn't need that reason. The fact is he's always chayev. The chiddush is even when he's an oris. Then we would still say that he could still tell him that instead of just saying, well, I'm an oris, I work on percentages anyway. Right now it's harder to water the field, therefore I'm not going to, and it'll just produce very little, and you and I will both get a smaller amount. So we're saying you can tell him that no, the fact is, since there's a river, it's a distance away, but it's still available, then you need to go water it that way. So the Gemara points out, Amra Papa, Hani Tauti Masnisa Kamaisa, the first two Mishnayos of our Perek, the first Mishnah, which we learned yesterday, which said that whether it's a place where they normally reap the grain or whether they normally pull it out of the ground, then you have to go call Kaminagam Medina, and we talk about what exactly they divide up between themselves, the owner of the field and the Kablon. So those two Mashkachas Law, those Dinim will apply, Ben Bachachronusa, Ben Bachablonusa. Whether the person, whether the worker is a choicher or a kablon, choicher and oris, either way those dinim will apply. Strictly speaking, Tosfos says actually what we said about that they when we say they divide up the grain, that doesn't apply to chachirus because there it's not a matter of dividing. He pays them a fixed amount of grain, but basically most of that mishnah, most of the first mishnah refers to either one, and our mishnah also refers to either one. Mikan ve'elach, after that, continues her papa, that isa v'kablonusa less v'chachronusa, there are going to be dinim in the following few mishnayos that apply to a kablon, but do not apply to a choicher, or the isa v'chachronusa less v'kablonusa, and vice versa, ones that apply to a choicher do not apply to a kablon, meaning an oris, meaning another. So as we go through the following mishnayos, for example, we're going to have the next mishnah down on this amud where we're going to see that it clearly applies only to an oris. It can't apply to a choicher, and vice versa. There are going to be other mishnayos, for example, again about the question of reducing the rent, that necessarily are going to apply to a choicher, because when it comes to an oris, it's not a matter of reducing the rent; they work on percentages anyway. The Mishnah had said, "Im amalei chacholi soda beis hasholchin zevchola." That we said, if he told him that if the tenant tells him, "Rent me this beis hasholchin," then we said, if the spring dries up, or whatever, then he is entitled to reduce the amount that he's giving to the balabas. So the Gemara asks, "Vamai? Why should he be able to say that I'm entitled to pay less?" Why can't the owner of the field tell him, Shma ba'alma amri lach, what I told you was only the name, meaning in other words, this place goes by the name of Beis HaShochin, even though it doesn't actually fit the criteria of a Beis HaShochin. Normally a Beis HaShochin, the definition of a Beis HaShochin is a field that's dry, that needs irrigation, and normally it's going to have a spring in it, but you can tell them that nevertheless, this is it's called Beis HaShochin, even though it doesn't actually have a spring in it. So I didn't say that I'm going to charge you more rent because it has a spring, but just because that's the name of the place is Beis HaShochin, I had no intention of whether it has a spring or not. After all, the Gemara says, Milay Tanya, haven't we learned similarly in a Braisa that sometimes you have such things? For example, if a person says to somebody else, I'm selling you a base core of land, even if the field is not a base core, which is the area where you could plant a core of grain, a core is 30 saw. Instead, it turns out the area is only one where you could plant a half a core, a lesach is half a core. Nevertheless, it's a valid sale. Shaloi Mocha, Loi Ala Shema, because what he sold him is a name that's called, and this place is called a base kor. It could be called that because at one time there was a base kor in this land, and now since then it's been subdivided. It could be the Shitta, the Rabbeinu Yohanan brings in Shitta Mukubetzes. You could have a possibility, for example, that at one time it was a base kor, but it's next to a river, and over time some of the land has crumbled away and fallen into the river. Whatever the case, the point is, because it's called a base kor, then that's fine. Vahud miskri base kor, as long as it is called a base kor, meaning, in other words, you'd have to bring evidence, you'd have to bring edim or whatever, that yes, this area is called base kor, and then he can say, well, then I sold it to you, and that's what it means. There are rishonim, the Raivan, and apparently the Rambam have a girsa when he says base kor zeh. He doesn't just say base kor, he says base kor zeh, so therefore there's more reason to say that he meant this particular area, and therefore, so in other words, it should have been your job to check out, is it in fact a base kor, or is it just called that because it used to be a base kor or something. Similarly, continues the Braisa, Karmani Moicholach, he tells him, I'm selling you a vineyard, even if there's no actual grapevines in it, it's still a valid sale, because again, what he sold him is the name of a place which is called a vineyard. It could be called that because at one time there was a vineyard there, could be called that because it's particularly suitable for growing grapes or whatever. But again, as long as we have evidence that it's actually called a kerem, that it's actually called a vineyard. Similarly, Pardis ani moichalach, and by the same token, if he tells him, I'm selling you a Pardis, we've learned the word Pardis several times in Armasechta. There was a place earlier in Armasechta where Rashi translated it as a vineyard, but here we can't because we just said a vineyard. So some Mefoshim point out that we're talking over here of a Pardis in general means an orchard. The Pardis means an orchard, and particularly it can mean an orchard where an orchard for pomegranates. In fact, you have a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Shlachayach Pardis Rimonim. So we see Pardis goes together with Rimonim, with pomegranates. Anyway, so he says, Pardis ani moichalach, I'm selling you a Pardis, af b'she'en bo Rimonim, even if it doesn't have pomegranates, higiyoi, it's still a valid sale, and the guy can't say it was a sale under false pretenses. Shalom mocholay al shma, because he sold him the name. Vohu demiskri paudesa, as long as it's called paudis. So alma. So we see from all of these cases, omale shma ba alma amrila. So he's able to say that I sold you something that goes by that name, even though it doesn't have the criteria in it that make it worthy of that name, because it used to or whatever. Hochanami. So the same thing over here. Namele shma ba alma amrilach. Why, when we're talking over here about in our Mishnah, when we have a Beis HaSholchan, which is expected to have a spring in it, or a Beis HaIlan, which is expected to have trees, and the guy is saying, wait, there's no, the spring dried up, or the trees have been chopped down, why isn't the Balabas able to say, you know what, calling it a Beis HaSholchan doesn't necessarily mean that it has a spring. Calling it a Beis HaIlan doesn't necessarily mean that it has trees. Why are we saying that, even if the guy said, rent me this Beis HaSholchan, why should he be entitled to a reduction in his rent? So the answer is, it depends who's the one who mentioned the word Beis HaSholchan. If the machir, if the owner of the land said that I'm renting you a Beis HaSholchan, then you have one din, and when the choicher says the other way around, says it, then it's the other way around. The difference is when it's the renter, when it's the tenant who says it to the owner of the field that I want to rent a Beis HaSholchan, where it's the machir, where it's the owner of the field who says I'm going to rent you a Beis HaSholchan, then we can say that he means not necessarily is it what would usually be called a Beis HaSholchan. This particular one happens to have that name, even though it doesn't really fit the criteria of it. And if you didn't check it out at the time, or even if you did and you found it had a spring, but later on it dried up, I'm entitled to say that, you know what, the place could be called a Beis HaSholchan anyway. But if the choicher, if the renter says to the machir here that I want to rent a Beis HaSholchan, kpeda, then it means he's specifically machir, I want to rent something that is actually a Beis HaSholchan, not just something that has the name Beis HaSholchan, and therefore if the spring dries up, then I'm entitled to to a reduction in my in my rent. So that that would explain the difference. Ravina Omer, Ravina gives a different answer. In either case, we could say that the machker is saying to the chocher that I want a base shulchan. The difference is midka Omer ze. Because he says this one, evidently we have to be talking about them standing in the actual field. Zeh is always, you know, you have the expression, you're able to point to something and say, this is it. We have a famously that it says, the tzaddikim osid lovoi are going to be surrounding Hashem and Hila and Elkenu Zeh. Every one of them is going to be able to point to, of course, with his finger. The point is, in other words, the word Zeh means we're right here. If he's standing there, Beis HaShochen Lomel LeMeimar, so why would he even need to mention the word Beis HaShochen? Obviously, we're standing in a field, which is a Beis HaShochen, and therefore we know what it is. So obviously what it means is, Beis HaShochen, what it means is, he says, I want the Beis HaShochen the way it is right now. So therefore, So in both cases, Ravina says it doesn't even have to be that the chocher ever says anything about it being a beis hashochen. But since the machkir, since the owner of the property is standing over there and saying, I'm renting you this beis hashochen, and you have different rishonim talk about is the focus that he said beis hashochen where it wasn't even necessary, or is the focus that he said zeh. In any case, the point is that therefore it means the expectation is it's going to be as it is right now with the spring in it, and therefore if not, then the chocher, then the tenant is entitled to say that I'm entitled to a reduction in my rent. Tosfos discusses. Then, so the Gemara is saying, "Idi, in either case, we're talking about de'omale machkir lechoicher, where the owner of the property is telling the choicher. It sounds like even if they're not standing in the field, but if the choicher is the one who says it, it sounds like, in other words, we have two possibilities: either they're standing in the field, and then it doesn't matter which one said beis hashochen, or they're not standing in the field, and the choicher is the one who says it." On the face of it, it means either way, we're saying there's a kapeda on it. But then Tosfos says that no, it seems not like that. So no matter what, whichever one of them it is that mentioned the word beis hashochen, it's going to depend whether they're standing in the field or not. The Rif and the Rambam and the Rif and the Rosh hold the same way. Meanwhile, you have Hagoris Hagrom mentions that the Rama and a number of other Rishonim learn differently, and they say Tosfos says it doesn't seem to work out because it has to be that in both cases they're standing in the field, because after all the Mishnah had you can't say in the Mishnah we're talking about that the chocher says to the maskir and only then is there a kapeda, so therefore it has to be Tosfos says either way they're standing in the field. But Ramban answers Tosfos's question and then he and the Rama and various other Rishonim hold that no, if the choicher says beis hashochen, then it's going to be that it has to be a beis hashochen even if they're not standing over there. So in other words, it would come out, according to that way of looking at it, if the chocher is the one who mentions, I want to rent a beis hashochen, and the spring dry that's in it dries up, or the canal that brings it water dries up, then either way, he will be entitled to a reduction in rent, because he can say, I insisted on it being a beis hashochen, and that was the condition under which I agreed to do this work at this rate. And then meanwhile, if it was the machker who mentioned it, then it would be only if they're actually standing in the field. Whereas according to Tosfos and the Rosh and a couple of other Rishonim, it would mean that regardless who it is that first said the word Beis HaShochen, only when they're standing in the field does it make a difference, and if not, then not. Okay. Mishnah says, HaMakabel Sodom HaChaveroi, a person with Makabel a field from somebody else, and he left it. He left it empty. He didn't bother plowing or planting or do anything with it. The word hayvira, you have the word bur, like ein bur yirechet that we have in Pirkei Avos. A bur means a person who's completely empty of Torah and a midas tovus. The same way it comes from a sde bur means a completely empty field that's not cultivated at all. Anyway, shomin oisa kamen ruyalasis. We have to evaluate how much this field would have been expected to produce if he had worked it. So we look at neighboring fields and see how much they produced. We call an agricultural expert, the Neusenloy, and he has to give him that amount. And Rashi points out, now we had at the top of the Amud, Rav Papa is saying that from here on, the Mishnayos are referring either to a Choicher or to an Oris, but not both. Necessarily, the din of our Mishnah has to be talking about an Oris, because with a Choicher, regardless, he said he's going to pay, say, 10 bushels of wheat. Of course, he's going to be chayiv to pay 10 bushels of wheat, no matter what, that was the rental fee. So obviously, there's no chiddush that he has to pay that amount. The chiddush is with an oris, where it works on percentages. Normally, we would say he has to pay, he has to give the balabas, let's say, as we talked about yesterday, 33% of the crop. And he, let's say, Tosfos had said, because he supplies the seeds, therefore he's getting to keep 66% of the crop for himself, but he has to give one-third to the owner. In this case, he would have to figure out what was the expected amount that it will give, and he's going to have to give that to the owner. One-third of zero is zero, but no, we don't say that way because he's the one who didn't do what he was supposed to. And the Mishnah continues, Shekach Kosev Loi, because they write out that formula. They write out a formula about that when they write a shtar of arisus. He writes, im over v'lo eved, if I leave the field fallow and I don't work it, ashalem b'metva, I will pay with metva. I will pay with the best. Different possibilities among rishonim doesn't mean that I'll pay as much as it would have if I had worked it, or it can mean that I would produce, that I'll pay as if it produced the best possible grain. Whatever the case, the point is that he agreed, he accepted on himself that he's going to pay, and therefore in this case he's obligated to pay. So the Gemara says, now when you get down to it, this Lashon, im over v'lo eved ashalem b'metva, I mean, here it's being quoted in the Mishnah, but it didn't start out as something that the Chachamim were misakin to write this in a shtar arisus. This is something that people came up with on their own. So do we say, does that have validity? So the Gemara is going to say, yes. Reb Meir ha-yadorish Lashon Hedyet. Reb Meir used to darshin Lashon Hedyet, when you have a Lashon that people write in a shtar, even though it wasn't necessarily, even though it wasn't initiated by the Chachamim, nevertheless, the Chachamim endorsed that it is a valid way of, that it is a valid thing, and therefore we can hold them to it. And here is an example. D'tanya, Reb Meir, I mean, over like Eved HaShalom B'metva. Reb Meir is the Tana of our Mishnah. He's the one who's saying that that we have in the Shtar over there the point that if I leave the field fallow and I don't work it, then I'm going to pay from the best, and therefore we can hold them to that. Now, Tosfos points out, on the face of it, what's the chiddush? Sure, he accepted on himself the responsibility. Of course, we have to hold him to it. The chiddush is, Tosfos says, even if it wasn't written in the shtar, because usually they write it, we treat it as though it was written. And therefore, in other words, since, as the Gemara is going to point out later, it's not considered an asmachta, then therefore we can hold him to it. And the point is, the chiddush is, Tosfos says, we can hold it to him even if it's not actually written in the shtar. Now, with that said, though, there is a point about this actually that relates to, there's an interesting point that was in Rambam Shlosha Prakim a day or two ago that describes in a ksuba from the original din is only collectible from Kauta, as we learned extensively back in Masechta Ksubas. The whole concept that a ksuba can be collected from a Tautlin is primarily a takana of the Gaoni. However, the Rambam writes that they started doing in Ksubas, they would write that you can collect from the Taltlin as well. And the Rambam says this is a very good thing that they started doing that, because that way you don't have to rely on Takana of the Goyim in this way. It's clear. He wrote it into the Shtar, and therefore we can hold him to it. And the Rambam says, if it's not written in the Ksuba, then you have to wonder, does he know of this Takana of the Goyim? We can't necessarily hold him to saying that that you can collect from the Tautlin when he can claim, I didn't know of the Stakhanah of the Goinim. So Rishonim and Achronim discuss about that. So what do you mean? Based on what Tosfos is saying over here, it seems even if it's not written, it should be considered as though it's written. So the Rivosh points out the fact is you do have the concern you might have a person who Taka doesn't know of the Stakana and therefore didn't intend to take on that Shibud. This way you can collect from the Taltlin even if the guy passes away and he left Yisoymim and they have land. Normally you're not allowed to collect from the Taltlin of Yisoymim. But like this writing in Shtar helps with that. And in fact, so the Shach ends up pointing out that basically, eventually, the base Shmuel points out, and the Shach points out that eventually, since it is commonly written, then yes, we can consider as though it was written, like Tosfos is saying over here. We're talking about fine. When you have somebody who doesn't know about it, then you can say maybe he didn't know, and therefore maybe we can't collect on that behalf. But here, where it's something that's normally written in a ksuba, then yes, even if it's left out, we can still hold him to it, like Rameyer is saying over here, or like Tosfos is explaining Rameyer over here, because at this point, it's a standard thing that people write, and therefore, even if he left it out, we don't assume that he didn't know about it. We would generally assume that he knew about it, and they didn't write. There are other explanations of Rishonim also, what it means, Rameyer HaYadodosh Loshen Hedyet, that according to them, then this Chiddush of Tosfos doesn't maybe follow. You have, for example, Rabbeinu Hananel gives an explanation that it means normally you would need a Tnai Kofel. Normally you need, like by B'nai God or B'nai Rovin, if I do this, then this, and if I don't do this, then not this. But here you don't need a Tnai Kofel because they don't write it that way in the Shtar. And nevertheless, we still give it the force of a Tnai. And then there are Rishonim who discuss that it means like we doushin it almost as if it was a pasuk. So the mayor would doushin such things of Loshen Hedyet. So now the Gemara brings there are several other Tanoim who would do the same thing. They would find Loshen Hedyet, a Loshen that people wrote in their shtaris, and they would doushin based on that, and they would come up with Chidushim in Halacha based on what was written. Obviously, when we say Hedyet over here, we don't mean it was Stam Amei Oretz who came up with these rules. In the case of the Ksuba, for example, that Amram writes, he says, Anoshim Chachamim Unavonim, it was very, very wise Chachamim who came up with this idea of writing in the Ksuba that you have, that you're Meshabed, you're Metaltlin, because that way it avoids this problem of relying on a Takana of the Gaonim, where you could always say, I didn't know of this Takana. So the Hedyotis we mean over here could be themselves important Talmud Chachamim, but not like world class Talmud Chachamim, or not like the Sanhedrin Dola who make Takanas for the whole Jewish people. Anyway, Reb Yehuda Hayadodish Loshen Hedyet. Another example, Reb Yehuda would also Daushin Loshen Hedyet like that from a Ksuba. The Tanya, Reb Yehuda Omer, Oda Mevi Korban Osher Al Ishtai. Suppose that a woman is chayev and a korban, and sometimes you have a difference between a korban for a rich or a poor person. For example, Rashi points out you have let's say at the beginning of Parashas Tazriah, when a woman gives birth, if she's rich, she brings a sheep and a bird as korbanos, and if she's poor, she brings two birds. So now suppose that the husband is able to afford the sheep and the bird, but the wife does not have assets of her own. She comes from a poor family. Nevertheless, he has to bring a korban of a rich person on behalf of his wife. V'chein kol korban v'korban, she chayeves. And the same thing with any other korban that she's chayev. Shekach kois of law, because he writes her in the ksuba, the loshen achrayus, the islach alayim, in kadmas tana, the achrayus that is on you, that you had, is on me, even from beforehand, meaning in other words that he's accepting on himself all her debts, even the ones that she incurred before they got married. So that includes any responsibility for korbanos that she has, where therefore he's taking on himself that responsibility, and he being rich, then he has to supply a rich person's korban. Rashi brings there's a slightly different girsa that existed before him, which he has a hard time with. So he gives the girsa as we have it over here. Tosfos discusses the original girsa, and Tosfos discusses actually, and other Rishonim discuss, would this only be, what about, for example, now this would apply to korbanos that are needed for her to be able to eat korbanos and truma, things like that. So it would include korbanos where she gave birth, where she was a zava, a mitzeras, or whatever, or things like that, or for example, also if she was a nazira. What about, for example, if she did nedarim or nedavos, then not necessarily. If she had voluntarily designated that she's going to bring a korban beforehand, he's not necessarily on the hook for that. And also, Tosfos says if she had borrowed money from other people in order to get food for herself, also that's not necessarily included. When it says achrayus de islach alai, it doesn't necessarily include that kind of thing, where she borrowed money. And Tosfos also adds, you can't say, for example, if she borrows money, the husband after all is able to be made for his wife's nadarim. So you can't have, you certainly can't say if he borrows money for no particular reason that he should be on the hook to pay it, because then that she could end up using up all his money that way. So therefore, so you have that consideration as well, as opposed to Nazirus. She's not going to become a Nazira again and again just in order to harass him. So therefore, yes, so Nazirus he would be on the hook for, unless of course he's made for her neder. So Tosfos discusses certain things in and out, in and out, ins and outs of that. Now Tosfos brings at the end from Reb Acha, who says that yes, a husband would be responsible to pay his wife's debts that she incurred before he got married, before they got married, based on this din of Rabbi Yehuda. But Tosfos disagrees with that. Who is this Reb Acha? So Bapashtus, it means Reb Acha Mishabcha, the author of Shi'iltus. Although Marshall says the Girsa should actually be so the, not not actually so you have there was a different Girsa, there was a different Girsa, Rav Echad, meaning one Rav, one particular Rav came up with this idea, and Tosfos disagrees with that. The Girsa Rav Acha would mean it was Rav Acha, where Rav Acha Mishabcha, the Marshall, not the Marshall, the Shi'iltus. Anyway, so it's a question that's discussed among the poskim. Is if a wife incurs debts before they got married, is the husband on the hook for those based on what the Shi'iltus says? Yes, based on what Tosfos says no. Okay, so that's another example of learning from Lashon Hedyot, because again, the point is he wrote out this Lashon and the Shtar for her, and we hold him to it, even though it's not an official Takanas Chacham. There are Mefoshim who actually bring from Yerushalmi that it's the other way around. When they get divorced, then it's written in the get. She writes that I'm releasing you from any obligations that you had regarding me until now, implying that until now he was obligated and all those things. Okay. Another example of Lashon Hedyot. Hillel HaZaken HaYadosh Lashon Hedyot. Hillel HaZaken also Daushin a Lashon Hedyot based on what it says in Aksuba. The Tanya. Anshe Alexandria, how you makadshinus nishesehim. Men in Alexandria, in Egypt, would be makadish their wives. They do kedushin in the usual way. Over shaskni sasim lechuppa. Then, when it came time for the chuppa, boyin acherim bechoytfen oisem mehem. Other people would grab away another man would come and grab away the kala and marry her instead. So we're with the kala's consent, without, we don't really know one way or the other, whatever the case. Or bikshu chachamim lasses b'nei mamzerim. So the chachamim are concerned, their children are going to be mamzerim. If the woman is niskadish to Reuven, and now Shimon elopes with her, then she's an eishes ish already. She's any children she has with Shimon are going to be mamzerim. Amalehen Hillel HaZaken avil iksubas imchem. But Hillel HaZaken said, bring me a ksuba from your mother. Let's see what the Lashon is over there. Hevil iksubas imon. Umatzesh kosubahen. He found the ksubas in Alexandria were written with the following clause. Lich shetikonsi l'chuppa. When you go into the chuppa, heavily into, then you will be my wife. In other words, they were being makadish al tnai. There was a tnai involved with their kedushin. Yes, I'm giving you right now the pruta or whatever it is, but that's not going to take effect until when it comes to the chuppah, then retroactively the kedushin will take effect. Also b'nei mamzerim. So therefore, the Chum said the children of these women are not mamzerim, because it comes out when in fact Shimon came and grabbed her and they eloped. Then it turns out it turns out retroactively she was never mekudesh to Reuven in the first place. I guess the Pashtus, we have to understand the Chacham did not have the ability maybe to prevent people from doing this, and that's why the only thing we could do, so therefore the only thing they could do is put this clause into the Ksuba to avoid the issue in the first place. Okay, another example of Lashon Hedyot, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, HaYadosh Lashon Hedyot. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha also Darshan Lashon Hedyot from Ashtar, the Tanya, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, HaMalves Chaveri, if a person lends money to somebody else, and there's going to be a mashkin involved. Now, we're going to learn later on in the parak that you have two types of mashkin. You can have one that you take to begin with when you lend the money. You lend somebody money and they give you collateral. You don't have so much dinim with. You just have you. He gave you collateral voluntarily. That's that. Then you keep it until he pays off the debt. But then you have the kind where the guy is not paying off his debt and you want to go and take something from him now as a mashkin. The Pasuk tells us you can't go into his house yourself. He has to come out to you. And we're going to learn later on in the parak that's not even you that that, that what it is actually you have to get a shliach beis din involved. You have a shliach beis din goes to his house and he comes out and gives the shliach beis din something for a mashkan. So now, when that kind of thing is being done, lo yimashkenenu yosim echoyvo. He's not allowed to take a mashkan, something that's larger than the debt that he owes. Shekach koisav loy. And again, the reason is based on Lashon Hedyot, because he writes out in the shtar when later on, when the mashkan is given back, then the malva writes out a document to the loiva that says, tashlumta de isloch alai, the payment that you owe me, kol kovol dichi, is corresponding to this. Meaning, in other words, that I took this mashkan and now I'm returning it to you, or not I'm returning it, but when I return it, this mashkan is going to exactly offset the choy. Well, therefore, so he's clearly writing, therefore, that the mashkan cannot be more than the choy. Tosfos has a short statement over here that says, even though he's not paying him the geroin, even though he's not paying him a reduction, it's only in writing, nevertheless, he shouldn't take more than a schoy. What does Tosfos mean by that? So the Marshal finds Tosfos very difficult to understand and says that what it means is essentially that Rabbi Shur ben Korcha is saying that if you were allowed to take a mashkan larger than you would be taking more than the value of a loan, and you can't do that. Obviously, that would be a problem. That would be a problem of ribis. So what do you mean? Even without writing that, he can't take more. But nevertheless, the point is, once they start writing, then we consider as though it was written, and again, it's one of those things where Tosfos says, even though they didn't write it, it's considered as though it was written. Marsha then goes and discusses and says that's not what Tosfos means, and he gives a whole different other explanation of Tosfos. It's not just that as if it wasn't written, but in other words, So we do say there is, to a certain extent, we say we consider, even though it wasn't written, as though it was written. But he says there's another issue involved over here, that it's considered as though he only borrowed it, basically. Again, we're learning something from the Lashon Hedyot over here as far as the rules of what he can take as the mashkin and what we're allowed to do with it. So the Gemara asks, "Time and the cost of lehochi." So you're telling me only because this is what's normally written, or in this case he wrote it, or it's normally at least written this way, hold the cost of lehochi like Tanya. Are you telling me then that if he didn't write such a thing, would he not be koina the mashkan? The point is, when you collect a mashkan, one thing is you, the malva, are considered you have a certain ownership over that mashkan. The Gemara mentions in other places. So are you telling me that that even without writing it, or even without it regularly being written, you wouldn't be koine it? Rabbi Yechanan says, now later in the parak, we're going to learn that you have the Torah tells us in two places, in Mishpatim and in Kiseitze, that if you take a mashkin, and again, we're talking about a mashkin, shaloi b'shah salva, the kind that you took later on when the guy's about to default, if it's something that he needs by day, for example, a tool for work, then you have to return it to him every morning. And if it's something you need by night, for example, sleepwear, then you have to return it to him every night. So the question is, in that case, what good is the mashkin doing? If you have to return it all the time. So Rabbi Yechanan says, mishkin, if you took the mashkin, the heishiv by a mashkin, and then he returned in the mashkin, a mess, and then the loiva died with the mashkin in his possession, so you gave him, let's say, for example, it was the tool, you gave it to him that morning, and later that day he died. You, the malva, are entitled to grab away the mashkin from his children. It's not considered like regular metaltlin of yisoimim, where we say you can't take it from them, you can only take karka from them, because it's not really his. It is, because it's not really the loivas. It really is considered the malva's for many purposes. Meaning, so what's the difference whether we write such a thing regularly in the shtar or not? The point is that regardless, he owns the mashkin. So what are you telling me? Only because he writes it, only therefore are we saying that that you have rules of how much the mashkin can be? Obviously, the mashkin can't be more than the halva. Otherwise, he'd end up taking more than the value of the halva. The answer is a hanik siva le geroin. The answer is writing. It helps as far as deduction. So that's the Giroin that the Marshal was just talking about is, in other words, that over time you use the Mashkin, it becomes worth less and less. It's a tool, for example. So it starts out when you took it originally as a Mashkin because the guy wasn't paying, it was worth $10. Now, over time, every day he's using it. Now, by the end when he dies, it's worth only $7. If it weren't for the shtar, we would say that the malva would lose out those $3 because the malva writes that all of the debt is connected to the mashkin. Then therefore he's entitled to say that I'm not just entitled to keep the mashkin. You also have to reimburse me three more. You also have to reimburse me three more dollars for that class. So that is the chiddush of that. That's the chiddush of that lashon hedyot. So it's not just the fact that he can't take a mashkin more than the value of the loan. It's more that he's entitled to. It's more that he's entitled to be reimbursed for that extra amount. So Tosfos analyzes the lashon further. That means, in other words, after all, if the Torah tells you you have to return it. Then the loiva obviously has rishus to use the mashkin. So why should he have to pay for the depreciation of it? What do you mean you have a shtar and therefore you have to pay for the depreciation? The fact is I have the right to use it every day. The Torah says you have to return it to me every day. But Tosfos says essentially that no, what he's doing is he's lending him the thing, and therefore he can be responsible for the depreciation, and also that the takana is this way. You don't want to discourage people from lending money, because if they say, you know what, if you're going to be using the mashkin every day and over time it's going to depreciate, then why should I bother even lending you the money at all when all I'm going to get from it is a mashkin that's going to depreciate and I'm not going to be able to collect the rest? So therefore they made the takana that he is able to collect the rest. So here's also again where the Marshal and Marshal are discussing what exactly does Tosfos mean with this and with their previous statement. What exactly are we learning from this Lashon Hedyot that we wouldn't have otherwise had? Okay, another example, Rabbi Yossi ha-yadarish Lashon Hedyot. Rabbi Yossi also darshan Lashon Hedyot from such shtaris that people write. D'tanya, Rabbi Yossi omer. Now you have like this. In the ksuba, there's the ikur ksuba. This is also in these days in three parakim of Rambam. You have ikur ksuba, the basic amount, the 100 or 200 zuz that we learned about in Masechta Ksubas. Then you have Tosfos ksuba. You have the extra amount that he voluntarily adds to the basic amount, and then you have the nichsim malug that are coming in as the that are coming in with the marriage. So now, as far as the Nichsim Malug, or the Nichsim Barzel, what we actually have to do is, so we write also the value of them in the Ksuba, but in many places they would have the minhag, they wouldn't write the true value, rather they would write more or less. So they might write more, for example, in order to make her look richer than she really is. So Rabbi Yossi, Mokum Shinagu Lassus Ksuba Milva, in a place where they have the minhag that they make the Ksuba is like a milva, that it's something that she can collect as a milva, namely that they write, for example, they write that the husband is taking achrayus for it, for example, like we do in our ksubas. Anyway, so then goiva milva, she collects from it as a, she collects, so then the so then the husband rather the husband can collect this from her father, like a milva, because in other words, the father agreed in the ksuba to give him these nechasim. So therefore, it's like a milva, where now the father is responsible to actually give it. Lichbol, Rabbi Yossi continues, in places where they have the minhag to double the value. So let's say it was $100 worth, and they write as though it was 200, and it's understood in the local minhag is everybody knows that 200 really means 100. So then goiva mechza, then he can collect only half of what's written, because again, it's understood that it didn't mean that the father took on himself that I'm going to provide $200 of assets, means he's only saying 100, and they wrote 200 in order to make her look more in order to make her look richer and then with more nechasim than she has. So that's what Rabbi Yossi said. That. So the point is, in other words, we see that you go according to what's written in the shtar, and again, even as Tosfos had said, maybe even if it's not written explicitly in the shtar, then nevertheless we would consider as though it was. There is the Shittim Kubratis brings from Rabbi Chaya Goin that it means specifically when it's written as a milva, then you have these dinim. On the other hand, the Shittim Kubratis says not as far as the half and the double. That doesn't matter whether it's written as a milva or not. That's a separate din where if they write double, then he collects only half because it's understood that way. The Gemara brings Nahabaloi, the Chachamim of Naharbala, Govul Tilta, they would collect only one third because their minig amakim was to triple the amount. Maremer Magbi Nami Shvacha. Now Maremer held that when you're collecting from the father of the Kala, you're not just collecting what it said in the Ksuba, but you're collecting also the Shvach, also you're collecting the full amount. So he would say, for example, if the Ksuba said 200, then you're collecting the full 200. He's entitled to say, I want 200 of Nechosim that you're bringing in for the Nadan, for the dowry, for the wedding. Omale Ravina Lamarema. So Ravina says to Ramema, how can you do that? Well, Tanya Lichbol Mechze. We said that if you double it, then you collect only half. So why are you collecting the whole thing? And the answer is like Kasha, how to konimine, how to like konimine. It depends whether they made a kinyan in connection with it. If they made a kinyan, then we can hold them to what it actually says in the shtar. If they didn't make a kinyan, because in other words, then the fact that they made a kinyan means that he actually accepted on himself the actual face value that it says in the shtar. So then that would be what Marema is doing, that you're collecting the full amount. Whereas if there's no kinyan, then no, you go according to the minigam din. The Gemara says in that connection, Ravina, the Shabbach for Kosev Librate, Ravina was marrying off his daughter, so he overvalued the Nechosim that he's giving as her Naden, as the Nechset Sain Bauzel that are coming into the wedding. So he wrote it double. Omrele Nikneminei Demar, so they told him, so they asked him, his Mechotin said, let's make a Kinyan on that. So he tells them, based on what he just said, no, it's one or the other. Either if you want a kinyan, then we're not doubling the value. Then we're going to write 100 in the ksuba, like the actual value that I'm planning to give. And if you want me to write double so that the kala looks, so the chosin of the kala look like they're richer, then we can't do a kinyan. Because again, like Ravina just said, if you made a kinyan, then I'm actually going to be on the hook for 200 instead of 100, and I don't want that. Okay, so continuing on topics of ksuba, which obviously is not really directly relevant to our masechta, but since we're mentioning these matters of ksuba, how it's written in the ksuba, and what we do with that, so the Gemara brings further. There was a man who, when they were right, he was about to die, and he tells his yoshim, give 400 to about 400 zuzim to my daughter for her ksuba, meaning he's saying that he wants there to be 400 of Nichsetze and Barzo written into the Ksuba that are going to be her dowry. But now the guy passed away, so we can't ask him what he actually meant. Sholach le Rav Acha b'rei de Rav Ibya l'kamei de Rav Ashi. So there's a sort of Acha b'rei de Rav Ibya sent the question to Rav Ashi. Do we mean Arba Meir de'inun Tamni Meir? Do we mean that he meant it's actually 400 worth and we're going to write in the Ksuba 800, because this was one of the places where they would write double the amount? Arba Meir Zuzi de'inun Moson, or does it mean the other way around? He means that you're going to write 400 and really he's only saying 200. So what is it? Omer Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi says chazinan. We have to look at the loshen that he said. If he said give her 400 zuz, that means he actually wanted 400 to be given to her, and therefore it means that he meant that you write in the shtar 800 and she's actually going to be getting, she and her husband are actually going to be getting 400. Her husband, actually, because her husband is the one who owns the Nixatain Bible. But if he says write 400 zuz, then it means the inun must, and then it means you're writing 400, but it really means only 200. That was one lashon of what Ravashi said. Ikadamri, another version is Om Ravashi Chazinan. Another version is Ravashi said no. We have to look at it as follows. If he meant 400, if he said 400 and he used the word liksubasa, then it means arameya zuzid in tamni meya. It means that it's going to be 400, which is written as 800, because liksubasa implies in order to be able to collect later on together with the ksuba. The iyama biksubasa, but if he had said in huksuba, then it would mean not for the purpose of huksuba, but in huksuba, then it would mean we write in the ksuba arameya zuzid in masam, which would really be only 200. But the Gemara says either way, v'lohi, what Rav Ashi is saying is not correct. We don't accept it lahalacha. Loishna da'ama liksubasa, v'loishna da'ama biksubasa. Doesn't matter what lashon he used. It always means that he means that we're going to write 400, but we're only going to give 200, unless he says give her 400 zuz without even mentioning the word ksuba. Anytime he mentions the word ksuba, then we understand it goes according to the minhag ha'medina, and the minhag ha'medina is that they double the value written in the ksuba. But if he doesn't mention the word ksubasa, then we understand it means 400 zuz outright. Okay. Getting now back to matters of arisus, as we learned in our Mishnah. So we said again in our Mishnah, we had this whole digression about Lashon Hedyot. Fundamentally, we'd learned in the Mishnah that if a person had agreed to work the field and then he didn't work it 1 year, then we said he has to pay the percentage that it would have produced. So the Gemara tells, "Ahu gavra de kabel ara mechavre." There was a person who was mechavel as an oris, as a field where he's going to work it. Omar, and he says, if I leave the field fallow, yehivnalach alpha zuzi, I'm going to pay you 1,000 zuz, which is an enormous amount of money. In those days, a person could typically live on 200 zuz. So it's a really large amount that he's telling him I'm going to pay, far more than the field would be expected to produce. Over tilta, in the end, he left 1/3 of the field fallow, so he worked 2/3 of it, but he left 1/3 unworked. Amri now do, so the Chacham of now do said, Dinahu diyovle tlosin tlasme or tlosin or tlos of a tilta. Well, then he's going to have to pay him 333 1/3 zuz because that was the deal. 1,000 if he left the whole field fallow. So therefore, we have to prorate it according to the amount that he left. Rava Amar Rava disagrees and says no. Asmachti to make an agreement like that to say that he's going to pay 1,000 zuz is an asmachta vasmachta loikanya and it's an asmachta is not koine. Because we've learned earlier in the Masechta, and Asmachta is something he expected to be able to do it. In the end, he wasn't able to do it. So there are different Rishonim that talk about different angles on this. We touched on this earlier in the Masechta. And Perek Ezo Neshech is the fundamental point: the fact that he said such an exaggerated amount, 1,000 zuz, which is far more than the field should be expected to produce, or is it more the fact that it's something beyond his control? Apparently, the Tosfos earlier in the Masechta learns that it's an asmachta when it's beyond his control. And apparently, the idea would be that here, when he left it 1/3 fallow, was because of some circumstance like that. Anyway, so the question is, what about how is it different than we said in our Mishnah that he says, if I leave the field fallow and I don't work it, I'm going to pay for Meita, I'm going to pay the best that the field would have produced. And that's not considered an asmachta. The answer is hosim like a gozim. That's exactly the difference. There he's not exaggerating. He's saying you would have expected to get 100 bushels of grain out of this field. So if I don't work it, then we're gonna pretend and we're gonna treat it as if it produced 100 bushels, and therefore I'm gonna have to give you your percentage out of that. So that's not, there's no guzma. Given to Kama Milsa Yeserta, but here he's saying something extra. He's saying 1,000 zuz, guzma ba'alma hu dekagozim, so therefore he's just exaggerating. And therefore we can't hold him to that. Now, does it mean that we wouldn't hold him to anything at all? The Rif says that no, he's still going to have to pay the percentage of what the field would have produced. He just doesn't have to pay the 1,000 zuz. But in this case, he would have to pay 1/3 of, we would have to figure out, he gives the owner the percentage of the 2/3 of the field that he worked. And then we would have to figure out how much would that other third have produced. And then he's going to give him a percentage of what it would have produced. That's according to the Rif. The Rosh disagrees actually and says that no, it means he'd be potter on that part at all. Since the agreement was 1,000 zuz, and we're saying we can't hold him to that agreement because of asmachta, then therefore the Rosh says that no, you would say that the whole thing is bottle, but in the end he says that, listen, you know, we still have to darish in Lashon Hedyot, as we said on Omer Aleph, and since the Lashon Hedyot would be over even a Shalom Ametva, the arrangement that we said in our Mishnah, that he said he'll pay from the best, then therefore he is in fact, so in the end the Rosh says, yes, the Halacha is like the Rif, that he does in fact have to pay for that part, but not based on the Rif's reason that by default he's chayev in it, but just because the fact is that's how it's usually written in the Shtar. The Gemara gives another example. Hahu gavra di kabel ara l'shum shemim. There was a person who would become an oris for a field where he's going to plant, the deal was that he was going to plant sesame seeds there. Zora chiti, instead of planting sesame seed, he planted wheat. Now, wheat is less valuable than sesame. On the other hand, sesame takes more nutrients out of the ground. In this case, the field produced wheat as worth as much as the sesame. The wheat crop that year was especially good, and therefore the value of that wheat is equal to the value of the sesame that he would have planted over there. So Rav Kahana thought to say that the oris is entitled to Rav Kahana thought to say that the oris is a so now, in other words, so on the face of it, the owner of the field has not lost anything, because in terms of value of the crop, it's the same as it would have been, and he's gaining from the fact that he didn't have as much nutrients taken out of the ground. So therefore, so Rav Kahana thought to say that the owner of the field would actually have to give the oris extra the amount of how much would he have had to pay, let's say, for fertilizing the field in future years, and now he doesn't need to. So in other words, we wouldn't say, so if let's say the deal was that the oris and the balabas were supposed to be splitting at 50-50, Rav Kahana thought to say in this case the oris would get a little something extra to make up for that. And in fact, Tosfos says in the Mishnah, in the same way, where he left it completely fallow, you do have to consider, on the one hand, the balabas is not getting a crop that year, and therefore the oris has to pay. On the other hand, he's gaining, the field is regaining its strength, that it didn't have nutrients taken out of it, and therefore Rav Kahana thought the same way, we would have to factor that in as well. On the other hand, Tosfos says maybe not. Maybe by sesame seeds, they really takes a lot of nutrients out of the ground. Therefore, Rav Kahana thought that we should deduct for that. Anyway, so Rav Kahana thought to say that therefore the oris should get something extra. Amulet of Ashi, Rav Kahana, Amri Inchi, but Rav Kahana says to Rav Ashi, who was a Talmud of Rav Kahana, says to him, no, it's like Amri Inchi. You have people have an expression, Kach sha'arav le'likhush mora. Better let the land be weakened rather than the balabas be weakened. Meaning, in other words, that after all, the owner of the field would still have preferred that he plants sesame seeds rather than we should have to go hungry. Yes, it produced wheat, and in this case, the wheat was worth as much as the sesame seeds would have worth. Nevertheless, the fact is, I expected you to plant sesame, and you have to fulfill your terms, and therefore, so I don't care the fact that the land would have now become weaker because of that. Doesn't matter. Especially, for example, I may have needed sesame seeds, so therefore, so no, so I'm not. I don't have to give you anything extra because of that gain. Fine. Well, the Gemara says, here's another case, Hahu Gavra de Kabel Ara L'Shum Shemi, another example where a person was an oris and he's supposed to plant sesame, Zarah Chiti, and again he planted it with wheat. Avda Chiti Tfei Min Shum Shemi. Here the value of the wheat was so high that it was worth more than the sesame would have been worth. Okay, in the previous case, we can say it was equal to the exact value. So therefore, we can say that. He doesn't have to. So Rav Kahana thought he has to give him something extra, and Rav Kahana says that not. But here we're talking about that it was actually worth more. So Sovereign Ravina Lamema Yov Leshvacha the Beni Bein. So Ravina thought to say that the owner of the field should have to give the artist the extra amount. We should have to figure out that the sesame crop would have been worth 1,000, and we each would have gotten $500 worth of it. Let's say now the wheat crop is worth 1,100. So Ravina thought to say he should have to give him 550. You should have to give him 600. You would have to give him, because the whole extra 100 is because of the oris, is because of what the oris accomplished. The oris planted wheat, and now it grew, and it's worth 1,100. So therefore, we should give him his 500, the half that he would have gotten, plus the 100 extra that he caused. But Amalei Rav Acha Midifki LeRavina, Otu Hu Ashbach Aralei Ashbacha. Do you think it's only he that caused the shvach and not the land? The fact is, the land was obviously extra good, and therefore it produced such a good wheat crop. So no, therefore the owner of the field is entitled to say, I should only give you exactly half. So fine, it means each of them is going to be getting 550 in our scenario, but I shouldn't have to give you the whole 100, because the fact of the matter is that the extra value came partly from your extra work, but partly also from partly also from the fact that it's my field. There was a point from Rishonim. There was a point that Rishonim make that Talmid Rabbeinu Peretz explained differently, that a little differently, that what it means is that it's not just because it's not just that the price of wheat went up to begin with. The wheat grew so much better than before. So first the idea was that so you could argue that if you had planted sesame, it might have also been as successful. The fact is that other fields that were planted with wheat grew extra well. So obviously it was an extra good season for wheat. So on the face of it, he would be entitled to get the extra amount for all the wheat, but nevertheless not, because we're saying the fact is it's not all his work. It's also the field that produced a better than average wheat crop, and therefore all they do is divide it, and he can't say that I'm entitled to all the extra value of the wheat.